On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You may recall Governor Evers formed a task force back in July to address broadband access. We're checking in on this 25-member group that is tackling these longstanding connectivity issues in our state. They've had several meetings. We'll meet again Wednesday. And last month, the governor directed more than $5 million in federal CARES Act funding to go toward expansion of high-speed internet. So what is internet access like in your part of the state? Is it reliable? Can you do virtual schooling or work from home with your connection? We're at 800-642-1234. Brittany Beyer is Executive Director of Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation. She chairs the Task Force on Broadband Access. Brittany, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me back.
So tell us what your task force has been doing since it first met 2 months ago.
So we met in August at the very end of the month, and you did mention that we're going to be meeting on this week, actually on Wednesday. So a lot of research has been done at this point. We actually created an immediate solutions working group as well, and that's met twice. So we're kind of working through five topic areas as well. Our meeting on Wednesday is going to be talking about what are the opportunities, what type of innovation do we need inside of our system, and then we're going to go from there.
I was watching your last meeting in early October with your solutions working group. That's the breakout of the larger group. And you asked, what are the low-hanging fruit? What can be addressed more easily than other things? What did you learn?
The low-hanging fruit, we would love it just to be easy to connect people into the whole entire system. I think a low-hanging fruit is making sure that we're working with the different agencies. So the DPI came up a lot because they've been doing some really great survey work and making sure that they know what all of the families need as far as connectivity. And if we use that as part of the mapping way forward, we've got a huge contingency inside of the state. They've been doing such great work in making sure that all students have access. So that's a leap forward in making sure that we can get everyone connected.
So in terms of the research you're doing, you're also, I'm sure, keeping an eye on the funding that is coming available, grants, both state and federal. What role does the $5 million in federal CARES Act funds, what will that have on your work?
Well, every grant that's going to the work in the state is going to be helping to close that gap, right? And that work really has to happen pretty quickly from what I understand. And that just couples on with the $48 million in the last budget that the governor awarded. The next round, the $24 million, is actually open right now. So there's just over and over again, just layering on those support mechanisms. We know that our providers need the assistance in order to make sure that we have all of our communities connected.
So what does access to internet look like in rural Wisconsin at this point? Has anything changed?
I would say that, again, pointing at the DPI, because with COVID-19...
Department of Public Instruction.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Too many acronyms. Mm-hmm. We know that they're really working on making sure that kids are connected. We know that our hospitals are doing much more telemedicine. That doesn't necessarily mean that everyone is still connected. I think we still have a great deal of work that we have to do. Our next steps are going to be coming up from the task force pretty soon, and then we'll go on another round of research and then make sure that we have some plan going forward.
We're discussing high-speed internet access in Wisconsin with the chair of Governor Evers' Task Force on Broadband Access. We have Brittany Beyer. She's executive director of Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation. What are your questions for this task force? What should they be working on? What questions, what things, problems in your community should they work to solve? What grants are you going after, and has your community been successful? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Brittany, your group is looking at the rural electrical co-op model. About 100 of the 900 or so rural electric co-ops in our country offer some form of broadband. That's according to the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. So how do you get co-op fiber projects off the ground in Wisconsin?
I think we need to make it affordable, and we need to make sure that we have the leadership behind. You know, we were discussing that topic, obviously, in the immediate solutions group. And, you know, although electric co-ops are taking a lead inside of it, you know, one of the things to think about is electric is very different from running a broadband service. So we need to make sure that the companies are ready to do that to be successful. So that was something that was a huge takeaway inside of that. If that's part of the model going forward, we need to have some blueprint and a plan to help the communities do that.
Well, communities like Reedsburg and Wapaka built and provided their own internet infrastructure. They provide the service. Is this an option going forward for other rural communities?
It's an option, and we have hundreds of different providers. You know, so that's the next part of it as well, is having a really robust conversation with the whole kind of structural map that's inside of the state. You know, there's places where you know, we could probably incentivize getting fiber to more people. We just need to have that kind of plan going forward. We could be supporting electric co-ops where that's the right decision. I think we just need more work on that, and that's what the task force hopes to do by the time that we have that report due in June.
Let's bring in John now, joining us from Menominee. Hi, John.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
So I have, I live in the country and not very far from town. I have cable going right past my house, and it actually has a box that terminates on my property. But the cable company says my driveway is too long, and so they won't bring it to my house, even though I've tried a couple times. And one time they told me that I could possibly get it if I would spend $7,000 to bury a wire and then for the pleasure of paying them every month for the normal fee. And so then even if the cable comes past your house, some of us out there still aren't able to get it because of the distance between the road and the house. And that's going to continue to be a problem unless we somehow address that issue as well.
John, thank you.
You're right.
Yeah, Brittany, go ahead.
Well, I think that's not an uncommon problem. So I think there needs to be a strategy behind that, right? So if it's the community understanding that that's part of the problem, how can we put in a system where there is some sort of, like incentive, or the community has a little bit of money that's set aside so that that can be done? Not an uncommon problem, but we just need a better strategy to help people get through that.
Do you find that having a 25-member task force, you're learning new things for this task force to work on? Or have there been anything that surfaced that was out of the blue or new?
I don't know if anything was out of the blue. I've been doing a lot of research on what's happening in other states. So some of, actually Wisconsin has the pool of grants that's actually much more than some states have. So we're fortunate in some cases, and then we have a lot of work to do in other cases. What's been really exciting is just listening to what's happening in other states and try to figure out how that fits inside of the Wisconsin model.
We're checking in on the governor's task force to address broadband access. Brittany Beyer chairs it. She's executive director of Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation. How do you want the state to expand broadband? Should the priority be on assistance for residential or commercial customers? What do you think? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute for more State Cap here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're checking in on the governor's task force on broadband access that was formed in July. According to the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, Wisconsin is behind the national average in connectivity. The problem is more acute in rural areas. Here's the governor earlier this month.
The COVID-19 pandemic has changed the way we learn, work, access health care, and connect with our loved ones. making broadband access perhaps one of the most important investments we can make.
How important is high-speed internet to your family or job? Have you noticed any new improvements or changes with more funding and grants in the pipeline? Join in at 800-642-1234. The chair of the governor's task force, Brittany Beyer, stays with us. So, Brittany, you have been looking at what other states are doing. The Badger Project reported that Minnesota has spent $255 million for broadband expansion between 2013 and 2019, and that was possible in part because providers had to match some of those funds. Where does Wisconsin stand on this?
Well, every single grant that's inside of the state of Wisconsin for broadband does have to have some sort of a match. If it comes from the company or if it comes from a community, that's certainly part of our mapping forward. So that's part of it. I think there's room for improvement. I think we also know that so much work has to be done, and it has to be in partnership. So I'll also say that the Broadband Connectors Pilot, that is a partnership between the Public Service Commission and Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation to support communities. There's six in this first pilot. I think that's also somewhere that where we're going to see some real movement in getting some of these communities ready to be at the table in solving their own local problems.
Yeah, so six communities were selected this month for this new Broadband Connectors Pilot Program. What will this program do?
It is going to allow local communities who don't necessarily have the technical expertise to kind of put together these programs to be able to approach a provider and then set up a plan. You know, the other part of this is that it's, you know, broadband and fiber laying and whatever fixed wireless, it takes years and years to map this out and do. So having a 3 to 5 year plan on broadband is something that a lot of the communities don't have, and this will be a way to move these communities forward.
And the pilot program is intended to help WEDC and the Public Service Commission to better understand what communities are facing out there with their technical needs.
Yeah.
You know, what is a mystery at this point in terms of the technical assistance that these communities need?
I would say I don't think there's a mystery. I think there's a desire for local municipalities to solve these problems. They just don't have the resources. So how do we match some of these state resources with local communities in a way that's positive and it makes the work happen and it activates our local communities? You know, I almost think this is a wash, rinse, and repeat type of situation. It's going to work on broadband. It could work on workforce housing. There's a lot that can be done with having this direct technical assistance.
We're talking with Brittany Beyer, chair of Governor Evers' Task Force on Broadband Access. What is the situation for high-speed internet where you are? Are your kids learning from home? What problems are you seeing with internet connection or with the way that you're able to connect with classes and teachers, with work? 800-642-1234. So state law requires municipalities to find a private partner in order to get a grant for broadband expansion. And some critics are saying that this could allow private companies to block municipalities from breaking up a monopoly. What do you see there?
That's a hard and tough question. I think we need to see more partnerships and better communication between the providers and local communities. It's a cost problem over and over again, and it's a communication problem. And so I think, again, technical assistance and being able to have communities ready at the table with these providers and say, here's the map, here's the work that we've done, let's figure out a solution together. I think that's one of the ways to move forward. Is it going to be with a utility, a local utility? That's one map forward. Is it going to be with a larger provider? That's another map forward. We just need more communication and have a mapping of what's happening so that we have a strategy for those places that are unserved.
Is that really what your task force wants to do here, is to get the mapping going so that you really know what you need to do to make these connections?
Well, in a certain sense, there is a mapping. So,
okay.
Right, so the FCC map does exist, and the PSE has really great layering systems on top of that. When you want to get to granular information, the FCC maps are not up to par. And that's where we're in this kind of quasi-misunderstood area. The FCC mapping does have to be improved. They are working on that. But there are some strategies that can be done to move forward. Again, DPI's survey is part of that, and then we will be able to figure out what's going on top of that. I think some states have this strategy of knowing exactly who's unserved, and then moving forward from there. And I'm hoping that we can get the task force to that point. I would also say that it's really important to know how integral broadband is to the whole entire agency system at the state level. Every single agency has something to do with broadband, and having a really, really in-depth understanding of how each of one interacts with broadband, that's going to help us move forward.
Let's bring in Bob now in Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. What do you see as far as broadband?
Well, I don't have broadband. I'm calling to you on my smartphone. If I want to use data, I go out to a local large institution that has or a business that has free Wi-Fi, and I turn it on. I'm a low income person, can't afford to have. But the least expensive I see now is $420 a year plus a hard drive fee.
Yeah. Brittany, what are the access barriers in terms of cost?
Affordability is definitely part of the issue, especially when you're thinking about education and learning and access to healthcare, right? So a better strategy along the lines of that needs to be thought out too. I'm sure a lot of people know that there's a program called Lifeline at the federal level, and there is a match inside of the state with that program. But that is something that the task force has to pay attention to because of situations like Bob's.
What does Lifeline do?
Lifeline gives you, I think it's about $9 a month towards a connection. So if it's a cell phone or if it's broadband, you get $9 off the cost of that. Now, some states, like Oregon, have a really robust match at this point. And so, you know, you're looking at that kind of layered assistance on that side. I can't tell you what we would suggest from the task force level at this point, but affordability is absolutely part of the problem.
Let's bring in Julie in Allentown. Hi, Julie.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I actually have a question and a comment. I guess I'll start with my comment because that'll let you know where we're going. So we are a family that lives in the country. I have four children in the school district. And to say the least, so during the COVID stuff, this has been an absolute barrier to education for us because we do not have broadband access. You know, and earlier in the year when all the libraries were closed, it was next to impossible for us to get their schoolwork done. That being said, I'm just curious as to the task force, like if they're going to be setting any kind of like priority list as far as how they're addressing, you know, the little guys like us that, you know, don't necessarily live in a huge community.
Sure. Yes. So, Julie, you're definitely not alone in that situation. We need a strategy about how to get to the completely unserved, and I think that's part of where we want to go. Also, you know, you mentioned the libraries and schools. Well, those are considered anchor institutions, and all of our anchor institutions are wired and connected at this point. So how do we push those connections out from there for our communities? That's something that we're looking at, and you're absolutely right, and I'm so sorry that you're having these issues with education, but you're right, it's a barrier, and we need to do better.
Brittany, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Brittany Beyer is Executive Director of Grow North Regional Economic Development Corporation based in Rhinelander. She chairs Governor Evers' Task Force on Broadband Access. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Wisconsin's Revenue Secretary Peter Barca. What questions do you have about the most recent revenue estimates amid the pandemic and what that means for tax bills coming due? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back with the head of the Department of Revenue, Peter Barca, right after this news update. Stay with us. More State Cap on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're checking in on the Department of Revenue and our state's fiscal position as the pandemic rages on. Tax collections in the pandemic have not been gloom and doom as feared so far. Wisconsin's Rainy Day Fund is at its largest balance in state history, according to the 2020 annual fiscal report released this month by the Department of Administration. Our general fund balance surpassed estimates at the close of the fiscal year. That's June 30th. What does this mean for the budget-making process going forward? What questions do you have about taxes on internet purchases and the impact that has on our overall revenue? It's 800-642-1234. Peter Barca is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. Secretary Barca, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much, Kate. Great to be with you this morning.
So what is the status of Wisconsin's fiscal position 7 months into the pandemic?
Well, it's been surprising that it held our own to a certain degree. We're slightly up above forecast, but, you know, barely. You know, it's about a 1% above. But the biggest concern is whether or not the federal government will pass another stimulus or a stabilization fund. Part of the reason that has kept us in a strong position, like many other states, has been that we've had an infusion of $7.5 billion from the federal government into Wisconsin. And that was not only important for individuals to be able to keep their household income going strong, but from a macroeconomic standpoint, it was also very important because they were able to go out and buy the goods and services from small businesses. It keeps the economy going. But that's run out now, and we see 8 million more people going into poverty nationwide. And we know that without another infusion of funds, all the economists are saying that they expect a pretty significant recession. In fact, we had Mark Zandi, who's the chief economist from Moody's, had spoken to the Federal Tax Administrators Association, and he had indicated very strongly that it just was absolutely vital that this be passed or they fear a pretty deep recession. And we can see already that our revenue is starting to drop. I mean, even though we've held our own and have done better than many other states, because we've had the right mix of services and manufacturing, and especially tourism-related states like Nevada have really been racked hard. But we can see revenue dropping. So that's why that stimulus package is so vital, and I'm just shocked to see that they still haven't worked that out.
Well, I want to ask you about our Rainy Day Fund, which is at its largest balance in history. Why is the administration building up cash reserves now when Wisconsinites are in dire straits? They're trying to get food on the table. They're trying to keep a roof over their head, and, you know, good luck getting unemployment assistance expeditiously. Why grow the piggy bank when Wisconsin is hurting?
Well, the piggy bank was almost all growing when things were good before the pandemic hit. You know, our economy was very strong prior to the, you know, pandemic hitting last, you know, February and March. And so during that period, we certainly have not grown the fund to any degree whatsoever. I mean, what ends up happening is whenever you have any kind of a balance at the end of the year, a portion of that balance gets shifted to the rainy day fund. Well, we ended the end of the year, you know, just slightly above. So almost no money was put in the rainy day fund at the end of this fiscal year. But it was in previous years. And in terms of tapping into that fund, obviously, if we were to go into deficit in this coming quarter, because we're only one quarter into our state fiscal year, well, then they would have to tap into that fund.
So are you saying also that the CARES Act has adequately taken care of the needs of Wisconsinites and additional state resources are not necessary to help at this time?
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Okay.
I'm saying the CARES Act were certainly very helpful. And, you know, Governor Evers has put a very strong priority on getting money out both to individuals, small businesses, farmers, and that has made a big impact. But we can see that revenue is starting to drop. We've seen more people going into poverty. So, you know, the legislature is not slated to come back in the session until January. I know the governor has tried to get him to come back to try to address various elements of the pandemic. But certainly it's been extremely helpful. And that's why, you know, the governor and many others are pushing very hard from the private sector and public sector to try to get the Congress and the president to come together on a term for a new stimulus. Because without that infusion of funds, more people go into poverty. And when people go into poverty, that means there's less money being spent on goods and services, and small businesses in Wisconsin suffer. And so it is vitally important. And with the election just a week away, it's absolutely remarkable that I would have thought that they would have just made it more of a priority to come together. So it's pretty shocking, given that we know this will have an adverse effect on our economic picture.
We're talking with Peter Barca, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, as we look at Wisconsin's financial position 7 months into the pandemic, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Where should our state invest taxpayer dollars? What are your priorities for spending now in the state? What questions do you have about the budgeting process? Call in. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. I was looking at the quarter one of FY21, the July through September numbers, and corporate tax revenue is up 52%. What does that do to?
Well, that has been remarkable. That's been really so important for us. That's helped us during this very difficult period. And, I do think that part of the corporate revenue has been the position that Congress and the president took to repatriate funds back into America. I think that had an impact to a certain degree. But also the fundamentals of Wisconsin, in particular for manufacturing, were doing pretty well going into the pandemic. So while Wisconsin's done extremely well, other states not quite as strong in that corporate arena.
Will that tax revenue stay at that level?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question, Kate. That's the most difficult to predict of all. In fact, you know, being on the board of the Federal Tax Administrators, we oftentimes will meet with the big accounting firms and others to try to get a picture of that. And I would say that's harder to predict than almost anything. I know that across in fiscal year 2020, most states saw a decline of like 9%. Mm. In corporate revenue, we saw, an uptick of 20%. So if we look at other states, it is starting to decline, and that could happen, but hard to predict. That one's really extremely tough to predict. Usually you can have a little better sense of where income tax is going or sales tax, but that one's the toughest of all to predict.
Another area is online sales, which has apparently been boosting our revenue, tax revenue growth. What is happening there?
Well, that's been remarkable. We're very proud that the Wisconsin Department of Revenue that we've increased the number of marketplace payers into the sales tax from 500 to about 900. So almost double. And that is really shot up in terms of the amount of revenue. We have projected, along with the Fiscal Bureau, that the marketplace would produce about $120 million in in revenue, and it's been about $250 million over the last fiscal year, so double what we ever would have projected.
So that's so like Amazon et al.
Yeah, well, it's Amazon et al. Amazon, obviously, is the big one. eBay, Etsy, groups like that produce the largest amount. And it's a good news, bad news story. It's good news in the sense that we're just so pleased to bring in that level of revenue. The bad news is that some of that revenue increase has come at the expense of brick-and-mortar stores during the pandemic. We've seen shifts where, obviously, people are ordering more online than ever before, some, you know, in every type of goods possible. And, you know, part of the whole idea behind the Wayfair court case was to have equity between brick-and-mortar stores and between the marketplace. And now we're seeing that diminish with many people shifting their sales and purchasing arrangements.
Well, let's bring in Dale joining us from River Falls this morning. Hi, Dale.
Hi. Sorry, I'm jumping in a little bit late this morning. I'm not sure if you've touched on Foxconn, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on, I know that was expected to be a tremendous boost to our, you know, financial situation, and where are we at with that, and are they holding true? Should we expect that that will have benefits for us?
Go ahead, Secretary.
Well, Foxconn so far, you know, obviously has not been able to meet the projection that had been hoped. You know, and they're still working through what their plans are for that plant. As you know, you hear from Foxconn officials, and I serve on the board of WEDC. You know, there's been ongoing negotiations between the state and Foxconn because, you know, obviously for the second year in a row, they didn't receive any state subsidy whatsoever because they did not hit their job numbers. And so there's been some discussion about trying to renegotiate the contract. But I know what Foxconn has indicated is that because of the pandemic and shifts in the market, they really have not finalized exactly how they plan to utilize their plant in Mount Pleasant. So it's a big question mark at this point, although, you know, I clearly Terry Gull, who is the primary owner of Foxconn Enterprises, has indicated they still plan to move forward in Wisconsin. So we hope that they do. We would like to see a win-win. And we'll see how that materializes here. But so far, they, you know, according to them, because of the pandemic and the shifts in the marketplace, that's prevented them from moving forward with their initial plans.
We're discussing Wisconsin's financial position amid the pandemic with Revenue Secretary Peter Barca. So where should our state put taxpayer dollars? What are your priorities when spending is uber tight? What questions do you have about the budgeting process? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with more State Cap and Secretary Peter Barca here on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation with Revenue Secretary Peter Barca. We're looking at our state's fiscal situation. A rise in taxes from internet sales has helped to improve revenue growth and will lower tax bills for the average state income taxpayer. Meanwhile, a list of agency budget requests for the next fiscal year will be coming in shortly in the coming weeks. What are you keeping an eye on with Wisconsin coffers? It's 800-642-1234. And Secretary Barca stays with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from La Crosse with a question. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. See, with the pandemic, with reduced revenues, businesses have obviously had to lay off people. Hospitals have had to furlough large numbers of people to cut costs and make ends meet. But I'm unaware the state has furloughed anybody or has cut any costs. And I'm just kind of wondering if the Secretary could elaborate as to what the state has done to try and make ends meet.
Secretary,
sure. There's a couple different things that the state has done so far. The state's under a hiring freeze now, so unless it's positions that can lead to an increase in revenue or are mission critical, so computer systems don't crash, things of that sort, that's been one way. And then secondly, Governor Evers ordered a 5% lapse in revenues at the end of the year. So essentially what every state agency had to do at the end of this last fiscal year was to, in the last 2 months, figure out how you could cut 5% for what you would have spent during the entire year. And now there'll certainly be, there's a requirement that we also identify a lapse for this coming year. So, you know, every agency, Department of Revenue is no exception, has had to look for things that, areas where we could trim back either through efficiencies or, you know, cutting back on other funds that we may have spent money on. So we're, every agency has been challenged with doing that, just like private business has done.
Where have agencies found those cuts?
Well, each agency is different, of course. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you kind of analyze your budget. You look at, for instance, maybe you had a new unit that was starting up with a new approach to something you had underway. And as opposed to starting that up, maybe you delay that, for instance. That would be one way. Another way would be that you slow down, you know, hiring so that as people retire, as opposed to filling those positions,
attrition,
you know, through attrition, you don't fill those positions. You cut back on, you know, anything except for essential travel, things of that sort are just some of the ways. Sometimes in technology, certainly it's important to keep your technology honor, but sometimes you just can't go ahead and purchase, you know, new laptops and things of that sort. So you look at every single arena to determine, you know, what each agency can do. And each agency has a different approach that they take, but those are some of the general approaches that we take. But especially at the end of the year, obviously it was pretty challenging because, you know, 5% doesn't sound like much, but when you only have, you know, a couple months to make that 5% cut through the whole year, it's a challenge, but we know everybody's going through it. And, you know, the governor's been very mindful of trying to keep our revenue in the black. And so we've done all we could do.
Secretary, I want to circle back and talk about our general fund. This is the biggest fund that lawmakers can use when putting together our state budget. It contains the general purpose revenue. As the agency requests come in and they cut, you know, they try to cut back where they can, will our general fund be able to handle agency requests, or is it going to be prone to a huge shock?
Well, obviously, you know, the governor has directed all agencies to you know, moderate anything they might request this year, because knowing that state revenues are going to be relatively flat, at least for the coming year. Hopefully not for both years of the biennium, but it could be that way, depending on, you know, largely if the federal government comes in to help stabilize and stimulate the economy. We think that with the prudent steps the governor has taken, that we'll be able to navigate our way through. But so much depends on the macroeconomic picture and, you know, whether or not Congress comes through in a final analysis or not. And it's been pretty disturbing so far, just because when you see 8 million more people going to poverty, you know that suppresses the economy, and you can see small businesses just desperately hurting. And we've done all we can do at the Department of Revenue to try and make it easier for small businesses during this difficult period. But you can see that storm clouds are ahead without some action on the part of Congress and the president.
We're talking with Peter Barca, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. We're looking at our state's fiscal situation 7 months into the pandemic, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. I'm wondering, Secretary, you know, we had such a backlog on unemployment assistance, and when people can't pay their bills, they can't provide for their families, they're not going to be spending, and you're not going to see that tax revenue generated. So is that a concern to you when there has been such a backlog on unemployment claims and being able to get this assistance so you can keep the economy moving?
Well, no question. It's been a major concern. And of course, Wisconsin is not alone. Every state was faced with just the most unprecedented speed and depth of job losses. 20 years of gains, job gains, are wiped out in a single month. I mean, we've never seen anything like that before. So obviously, there's been very strong steps taken. The governor brought in an interim secretary of DWD, and they've put in place new systems. They've required overtime on the part of employees to step up the efforts to try and process these claims. But it was the largest one-month drop in U.S. history of people and jobs, and nobody could have expected that. And the other problem they've had in that department is just having outmoded IT systems, and it's something that, clearly the governor has taken much more aggressive actions now trying to update those systems.
And, you're of course not over the DWD as an agency, but you sit at the table with the other secretaries. When will the backlog be cleared?
I think they've made significant gains. I know that there certainly has been progress made. I'm not clear with the week-to-week kind of progress, but I know that there has been some progress, some significant progress made. And I think things that the governor has instituted, such as required overtime and bringing in new systems, every agency, or virtually every agency, I should say, has sent people over to DWD to help with that processing. I know we've sent people over on a couple different occasions, and that's making a difference too.
We have a listener who emailed with a question. They said, why is the money from the rainy day fund or from the general fund not going into preventing evictions? They say that the tenant resource the tenant resource center in Madison is out of funding to help people pay their rent who are unemployed due to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the challenges has been to try and get, legislature back in the session in order to look at these kinds of ideas. We have used substantial amounts of the CARES Act, though, in order to help people with rent assistance. And I know that's made a substantial difference. But clearly, every single effort will be made when the legislature comes back to try to help people in these very difficult times.
All right. So as you look forward to the next quarter and where our different accounts will stand, what concerns you most? What keeps you up at night?
I would say just what keeps me up at night is just having the amount of economic activity to keep revenues coming in. As I've indicated, our revenue picture has dropped. And while for the overall fiscal year, we're about $98 million above our projections, each month, though, we've seen a substantial drop from being, $150 million above collections in July to about $31 million below in September. So it's, it's trying to get, the president and Congress to move on a bill. It's taking substantial actions to help small businesses because we know it's going to be extremely difficult, especially for service-oriented businesses during this winter, to maintain their, operations.
Well, Secretary Barka, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, Kate. Great to be with you.
Peter Barka, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Revenue on the Ideas Network.